What's up, everybody? We had a great and wonderful weekend. World-class goals, world-class performance. There's been a lot to unpack. So without further ado, let's get into the latest episode of Back on our podcast. So Josh, how did you see this weekend?
I mean, this weekend was amazing. This is why we love club football. No disrespect to international break, but I think Mo Salah's goal, Mendy's performance, Ansu Fati's goal, this is what we want to see. This is why we love club football.
It's interesting you said Fati's goal. It shows that you don't really hate them. So, okay.
I don't hate Barcelona. No.
No problem. We'll see as the episode progresses. So so let's get into it. What do we have today?
Okay, so let's start with the first game of Saturday in the Premier League, Liverpool Watford. Salah's goal, magnificent. But before we get to Salah's goal, now Ranieri must know how difficult the job is.
I think the job is, it's going to be an upward struggle for him, because looking at it, I think that was very abysmal from Watford. Like, don't get me wrong, like Liverpool, they did their bits, but I just felt like Liverpool, they were not even trying. Liverpool, they were like on third gear. They were just cruising through the game. There was no point in the game where you could see that, then there was any threat to Liverpool's lead. So I always feel there needs to be a lot of work to be done there. If not, they'll most likely relegate.
I just think that first, it was strange that he switched to a back three, because usually at Leicester, at Fulham, at Sampdoria, all his previous clubs, he plays a back four. So to go to a back three, when even the team themselves, the players themselves are used to a back four. So you're coming to a team that plays a back four. You as a manager, you're usually known to play a back four, then you decide to go with the back three. On remembering that the players were away from international break, so they didn't even have time to work on the structure and the team shape, and you now bring a new structure to play a juggernaut such as Liverpool. There was only going to be one outcome. I think Liverpool were always going to win, but I think Ranieri just made it too easy for them. Now, Salah's goal. I don't even know what to say, because this guy is, on current form, he's on arguably top three players in the world. I think him and Lewandowski, Benzema right now, for me, are the best in the world.
Yeah, I agree. There are no names that you can say that is ahead of Salah right now. He's the best player in the Premier League. And he's, like you said, top three in the world. I just think that's the thing. Football things change quickly. We can be here in November and we'll be calling another name best in the world. So that's it. I feel he's in a good form of his life. And looking at it, what I'm most impressed about is he has started linking others, bringing others into play. And that's what has impressed me so far. So his all-round game has drastically improved. So that's one thing that has impressed me a lot this season. Salah.
Okay, yeah. For what you said about November, another player, I think, let me say, on current form, he's top three in the world. So let me correct myself. It's not like I would say he's better than Messi or anything, but at the moment, he is better than Messi. He's better than Ronaldo on current form. So for his all-round game, I think there's a myth about Salah that Salah is selfish. And I think that myth has gone on for too long. Like, people just, like, you watch TV or you listen to the radio and then people say Salah is selfish. And so at the back of your mind, you just believe that it's true, that Salah is selfish. But if you actually watch the game, Salah creates more chances than Mane does. Salah creates more chances than even Firmino does. Firmino just is unselfish in the sense that when he should shoot, he doesn't shoot. But Salah creates a lot of chances. And I think now he's getting noticed because Mane is actually now finishing those chances off. Unlike when Mane was not informed that he was wasting the chances Salah was creating. So it was not, because there were no assists to Salah's name, it was not like he wasn't creating chances. So I think Salah has improved his all-round game, but it wasn't that terrible before. I agree with you that he has improved it. But I'm just saying this for people who always thought that Salah was selfish. Salah was never selfish. I don't think, at least to me, to what I watch when I see Liverpool play, Salah is not selfish. And I think Long may continue because the guy is having a goal of the season competition just by himself. Look at the goal he scored against City. And this one was arguably better. So, I mean, incredible.
What's important for to me is just that, like, Salah was selfish, like, to a degree. And to me, I don't necessarily say, like, it's a bad thing. But there was a point where he actually had his fight with Mane. But the thing is, like I said, his all-round game has improved. It's not just me talking about all-round game. I don't just mean the assist. You could see the way he reads the game, the way he thinks about when to pass, when to release the ball, when to hold it up. All this kind of good stuff. So his overall game has improved drastically. And I even think right now he's top scorer, joint top scorer in the Premier League with the king himself, Didier Drogba. And Mane is not even far behind them. He's on 100 goals as well. And Salah is on 104 alongside Didier Drogba. And I think looking at it, yeah, both of them will be on course to break that record soon rather than later.
I think another day, there's no time for today. I wanted to say, who is the best African player in the history of the Premier League? But that would be a heated debate because we know some people say Drogba, Salah, Mane, even you could hear SCN. So I think that would be an interesting topic for another day. But now we move on to the next match. And I mean, Chelsea won Brentford. We talked about how Brentford were not going to be pushovers. And I think they have Edouard Mendy to thank because, I mean, what an incredible performance.
There are two ways you can look at the Brentford game. One, you can say, like a neutral fan would say, because I was on Clubhouse and people were saying it's an embarrassing performance from Chelsea. How can you be champions of Europe and play a very poor and negative football? All this kind of stuff. But me, looking at Chelsea, because I know what Chelsea has been right from time, right from the days of Mourinho, Chelsea have always been a defensive team. And I would say, what I would just say is it's worrying looking at Chelsea not playing well and getting 3 points. It's worrying for the rest of the league because Chelsea right now, they are grinding out those results. And before you know it, we're already halfway through the season and they are still top and leading the chase for getting the Premier League. What I'll just say is I've said this before, Edouard Mendy is the best goalkeeper currently in the Premier League. You can give that the second position. But to me, Mendy is the best. And I think when when Tuchel start playing Lukaku in the right position and when they get some key players back from injury, I think Chelsea will still be good to go.
Okay, yeah. It's interesting you said Lukaku right position because I was going to get to that next because Lukaku has not been firing for the last, four, five matches. So now, I want to know because we see a lot of people on Twitter who are just trigger happy to just throw players who don't score. You hear them, you see Man United lose and then they go for Ronaldo, like Ronaldo is the problem of United. They see Lukaku not scoring and they go for Lukaku. So I'm wondering now, is it that Lukaku is not playing well or is it that the service to him is not good enough?
I think, to me, I don't think Lukaku is not playing well. I will go for the latter. But what I would just say is a combination of different things. Like Tuchel, when you watch Lukaku under Tuchel, there's this role he plays. And that role, most of it, is always to drop back and receive the ball and make others, bring others into play. But for Inter Milan and for even Belgium, he does more than that. He can hold up the ball, bring others into play. He can run in behind the channels, especially from the right side. So if they are able to diversify Lukaku's game, not just restricting him to always receiving the ball, I think you get the best out of Lukaku that way. And well, like you rightly mentioned, the service needs to be better.
Yeah, the reason I said that is because I watched the game and I can't count too many chances that were created for him. He scored a goal that was rightly ruled offside, a pass from Timo Werner. What strikes me in Chelsea's midfield is that you have Thomas Tuchel now. He wants to play a midfield that the players are good at beating players. So you have Kovacic, a good dribbler. Loftus-Cheek, a good dribbler. Kante, a good dribbler. But none of these guys, or at least Loftus-Cheek and Kante are not very good passers of the ball. I'm not saying they are terrible, but they are decent at best. The only good passer of the ball is Kovacic, and Kovacic was terrible with his passes on the day. I don't know, for whatever reason against Brentford, his radar was just off. He was misplacing passes, playing them either too long or too short. And so I'm wondering, where do they want Lukaku to get chances from? Because Loftus-Cheek, to me, he seems more bothered about dribbling people in midfield and winning fouls than actually looking forward and playing Lukaku in or Werner.
That sounds very familiar, like Jack Grealish.
I mean, exactly. Like, Chelsea now have a Jack Grealish in their defensive midfield in the form of Loftus-Cheek. I mean, he played well, but I think that he should... there's a balance, yeah? So now, Chelsea has a midfield that can beat the press of opposing midfields, but now they need to balance it with actually making good passes. So something has to give. You have to remove one of these players and put like a Jorginho or a Mason Mount that can actually spray passes. You can't have three ball carrying midfielders with no one with the eye for a pass. I think that doesn't help the team in any way. But then I think the coach knows what to do. Thomas Tuchel, he would analyze the game and see that they need to be creating more chances. So let's go to United, who it looks like they have a ton of issues at the moment. And I think the biggest one is the coach. And even the players seem to agree with me now, because we had Paul Pogba and Bruno Fernandes come out to say that things need to change. Pogba said things need to change. They need to change their mentality. The tactics are not good enough. Obviously, who is in charge of tactics is Ole. The tactics need to change. Then Bruno said that when the team goes ahead, that they cannot slow the game down, that they should quicken the game to score another goal before maybe slowing the game down. So, in essence, he's blaming Ole, that Ole tells them to slow the game down anytime they take the lead. So if you're Ole now, or no, not even if you're Ole. So now, does this confirm what we've been feeling, that Ole doesn't have the personality to really take charge and be feared in that dressing room?
We've said this time and time again. The trinity of mediocrity, Ole, Pochettino, Koeman, we even expanded very soon and add Arteta to it, but we'll come to that later. But what I would just say is, in order not to make the podcast redundant and start repeating things, I would just say, what's the key thing here is, you can't have three luxury players on the same pitch. And what I mean by that is, players that do not do enough off the ball. And that's
I think you can. Now, I'll give you the example of Man City. Man City have all the luxury players in the world, but they still work hard off the ball. You know the problem with Man United is what really struck me this weekend was United. Obviously, we know United don't have a pattern when they're on the ball. They don't have patterns of play. They don't create chances in a usual format. But what really strikes me is off the ball, United don't even have an identity. They don't press high. They don't try to win back possession. And at the same time, they don't fall back to a good defensive position. Like, they don't fall back into position that will make them hard to break down. They just lie there in midfield and watch and wait for the... Like, so you have to pick one thing. Either you press and try to win the ball or you fall back. United do neither. And I think that is the problem. I don't think it's the players themselves. I think that comes from Ole. Because Bruno cannot run.
What I want to highlight is it's not like you can have luxury players that can do hard work. But when you know a certain kind of player, you know them. Like, I'm a Barcelona fan. I will tell you, for years, Messi chooses the games he press. And those are like big games. And he doesn't even press throughout. Yes, you can have that in your team. That is just one person. But when you have three people doing that, like, I get what you mean. As a team, they don't press together. You can see maybe Greenwood would go and Sancho would go. The rest, they are not on it. They are not on Son with what the rest are doing. So it's all shambolic. That is the manager. But the one I would say is when someone like Bruno misses the ball, when he loses the ball, you see him, he try to still press, but when the man beats him, he doesn't carry on with the pressing. You see Pogba, same thing, and Ronaldo, same thing. I'm not basically
I think the person to carry on is the person behind Bruno. You don't expect Bruno to go around chasing the one player around the
gap. No. There are certain zones where a player occupies. So when you're still in your zone, you still need to still carry on to press. When it has left your zone, you can now pass it on to someone else. That's what I want to just really come on to. I'm not saying Bruno works hard, but like there's difference between like the best way to put it is you need someone in the midfield ready to do the dog's work. And I even said this on Clubhouse. If Man United gets someone like a Wilfred Ndidi who will do the dog work, I'll run agendas and say that is slavery because they want to kill the guy because you cannot just have one person doing the entire dog work. Yeah. So I just feel they need to get the balance right. You can see to Chelsea's midfield. They still have Chelsea pressed together, but they still have someone that is ready to do that dog work. Everybody has that in their midfield. Everybody. And we all know in modern football, the midfield is your engine.
Okay, so I get what you're saying about luxury players, but at the same time, I think it still boils down to the coach. So a slight disagreement between us there. But okay, United now, what's the way forward? Do they, because it doesn't look like they are going to sack Ole. The board have faith for whatever is in Ole. So do you see them getting decent results from now to like the next 8 or so matches that they have a tough run?
We've seen this time and time again in previous years. When Ole's back is against the wall, they seem to step up and get victories. I won't be surprised if they get results against Liverpool at Old Trafford. So I just think it's one of those things where your back is against the wall and it's now time for them to step up. And I'll see them get some victories along the line. They might even win against City, which is part of their run that is coming up. And they can even get a result at Old Trafford against Liverpool. So I won't rule them off like that. But when it matters, when they really need to start beating other teams that are actually small, because this is the first time Manchester United is actually facing a team that is in the top six, which is Leicester, and they were not able to break them down. So it's quite worrying. But I think they have the players, and I see them, they'll turn things around. But it's just the way Ole does it. They become shit for some months, and they turn things around. That's just the way. So Ole at the wheel, long may it continue.
Yeah, I agree with you that I see them grinding out some results. Though the performances, I will tell you for free right now that the performances will not be good, but they will get some results. And at the end of the day, the board and the fans will look at the results and forget the performances. And so he will find a few good results in this run and then turn the fans back on side. And then when you expect them to do well against small teams, then he lets you down again. I think that's just the cycle that would probably keep happening until the United board wake up and smell the coffee. For Arsenal, you had the returning hero, Patrick Vieira, coming back. Just quickly, Arsenal, are we to praise their spirit of not giving up and equalizing at the end, or are we supposed to be disappointed because it's just Crystal Palace?
For Arsenal, they stayed the game very well. But what I would just say is, time and time again, when I've watched Arsenal this season, they have these, for example, 10 to 15 minutes where they play well, and the rest of the game, they become shit. They were not able to control the ball. Nothing. That Crystal Palace dominated Arsenal in their own stadium at the Emirates, which is quite shocking. I've seen why you like Gallagher so much. I think he's
that guy is a baller.
Yeah, I think he's a very, very good player. I just think he's quite unlucky with the competition that he has to face in Chelsea. If those guys were not there in Chelsea, he would be a starter for Chelsea. So I just think, looking at it, Patrick Vieira has done a good job. He has been able to get Crystal Palace playing attractive football, and they are playing it with confidence and a certain degree of swagger. So I just feel Arteta, man.
You're thinking of extending the Trinity to a foursome, so that says a lot. That says a lot.
It's like I need to. We need to, because when you look at this, he's playing two number 10s. That's Emmitt Smith Rowe and Martin Odegaard. Leaving the.
Odegaard is playing as a holding midfielder.
No, but is like, but when you look at it on what they try to do on the pitch, the entire work is
Is
the midfield. It's
4-1-4. Yeah.
the entire work is left for Partey, and you cannot leave that alone for Partey. That's why whenever they meet a good team, they keep dominating them in that midfield. And like I said, the engine of any football
I think you
team
can
is
do that.
the
I think you can. I think you can only do that against like teams that are really maybe lower division teams or people that have already gone down and have given up. But you can't do that against a decent Palace side. You can't.
Exactly. Man, I just think
But
I just think that they need to go back to the drawing board. Some players, obviously, we've said this, they need to go. I was speaking to Arsenal fan when they were saying Pepe is a good player. I've said this, Pepe is just Ishalan vibes most of the time. You can only guess. Yeah.
Pepe did well in the first half yesterday. I can say that. I
And the
can
rest
say
of the
that.
game, where did he go to? Where did you go to when you need them? You can't.
I mean, I can't really blame just Pepe though. Where did the others go to as well?
Okay. You could say that. I agree, but at the end of the day, the I just want to ask, that incident on Saka, do you think is a red card?
Oh God, you know, I've heard a lot of opinions and I really had to watch it and watch it and watch it. And what I think it's a yellow card. I think the player was trying to volley the ball. Now, I don't know. I might be wrong in the sense that he might have planned it. He might have said, okay, I want to kick Saka. But he was smart in the sense that he was looking at the ball all through. He never for once looked at Saka. So the fact that his eyes were on the ball and he kicked at Saka, it was like he wanted to kick the ball. But if he had looked at Saka, then we would have all said yes, he did it on purpose. What do you think?
Okay, before we move on, because I know we are on this matter of our timing. So, like, for example, we've all played football. Makoto is at the back of Saka. Clearly, there's no way in hell anyone would tell me he didn't see Saka. Even if he did not directly look at Saka.
Obviously, obviously,
Yeah,
obviously, Saka.
Saka is still in his line of sight. And you know what's funny? Saka not for once knew that anyone was behind him. Or Saka,
So you think red card? You think red card?
Yes, I think it was a red card because
Okay.
he could have easily pulled out from that thing, but he just went ahead and kicked.
It's hard to argue against that, but I think it's just one of those decisions that could go either way. I'm
You know what
leaning
they
towards
said?
yellow. What?
Do you know what they said in the studio when they brought in Domot to actually break it down?
Yeah.
Yeah. They said it's a high yellow, a high yellow,
Oh, it's
like.
an orange. An orange,
Like,
yeah.
yes. So you're right. Was like, what did they mean by that? High yellow, low red. They should. I don't understand this, man. I don't
God.
understand.
Okay, so you speaking of, you talked on Gallagher. My liking towards Gallagher, that he's a young player that I see with a lot of talent. Now, another young player from Chelsea that is on loan. Just quickly, Billy Gilmore is on loan at Norwich City, and Daniel Farke, Norwich manager, said that it is not his duty to develop players for other clubs. So that's his reason for benching Gilmore. Because if you ask me, Gilmore is better than virtually every midfielder in Norwich, but he's benching him because he does not want to develop him for Chelsea. I don't even understand. Like, where's this pride coming from? Don't you have to be good to have pride?
His pride will send him to the championship. So let's not be bothered by that. Let's not be bothered by that.
Okay, so the last Premier League fixture we're looking at quickly. Newcastle, they started the new era in disappointing fashion, going down 3-2 to Spurs, which is actually a flattering scoreline for Newcastle. This is the most one-sided 3-2 you ever see. Spurs should have won this game like 3-1 or 4-1. But then there was an incident where the game had to be stopped because the fan needed emergency care, and it was good. I was really impressed with the way the ref handled it, Andre Marina, and we saw players like Sergio Reguilón point it out early, and then they had to leave the pitch towards the end of the first half. And then, thankfully, the fan is in stable condition now. The game, how difficult do you think it is for players to recover from such a thing and then go back to play?
I think I don't know the words you use, whether terrifying or horrific, like, because you're having different emotion and worrying about it, someone's health and someone's condition, which is right.
Sorry, can I just say something?
Yeah.
Me, that I was watching on TV at home, yeah. I can tell you that if that fan was not, like, if they did not say that the fan is in stable condition, I didn't feel like watching the game again. Like, I was really worried. I was like, no, this can't happen. Like, someone cannot die on this day of happiness for Newcastle Football Club. Like, it was really terrifying. And if they had continued the match for whatever reason, I don't think I would have even been able to continue watching it.
Yeah, I get what you mean. Like, I felt the same
not,
way.
Not to talk of how the players themselves who have to play the match will be feeling.
Exactly. It's really, really horrific in my eyes. Like, I'm just thankful that they were able to respond and deal with the matter as soon as it came. And thank God that the person is all right now. So, but going back to the game, I just feel it was a game that Spurs cruised, but Eric Dier decided to score an own goal as usual. Media as it is, but I just feel there was a point where they showed Amada Stavely the look on her face. She was like, "We're getting this Bruce out of this club." Like, I was like, "Yeah, these people are being business." And I think as time goes on, I think we start seeing changes at Newcastle. But for now,
yeah, definitely.
They just suffer.
Definitely, I think the first change needs to come with Steve Bruce getting fired. What do you think? I think he needs to go. Like, are you in agreement with me?
Yeah, exactly. He needs to go, but I just think they should not rush in giving someone a long-term contract. They can bring someone.
I think Eddie Howe, because he's used to coaching a small club like Bournemouth. He did wonders with them. I think Eddie Howe is going to be a better bet for them than, say, Frank Lampard.
Yeah. I agree. Eddie Howe is a very good manager.
Then now let's talk about, okay, just briefly, Harry Kane, first goal of the season. I don't know, maybe we'll see the proper Harry Kane back. We'll know if it was a way to signal his return to form in the coming weeks. We'll see how it goes. But off the field for Newcastle, we have 18 of the 20 Premier League clubs voting to stop Newcastle from having sponsorship deals. So basically the agreement for those 18 clubs is that you're going to stop Newcastle from having sponsorship deals that are tied to their owners. So companies that are Saudi owned cannot sponsor Newcastle. So I don't know. Are they right to do this, or are they just being childish and afraid of Newcastle?
They're just being naive, and they're just being hypocrites. At the end of the day, because most of this club, they do the same thing. I'm looking at City.
But you know what's interesting here? You know what's interesting? The two teams that did not vote for it, obviously Newcastle cannot vote against themselves. And Man City did not vote for it because maybe they know that that's what they did. And they said, Man City said that their lawyers advised them that it doesn't make any sense to vote against Newcastle. They said it's their lawyers that advised them, but I think they just knew that they would be hypocrites if they vote against it because that's what they did.
And the truth is, no matter what they want to do, they can't stop what is about to happen. They can't stop it. That 350 million will revamp that club. They can't stop it. Go ahead.
The interesting thing is that these guys, I like the word you used at the start. You said naive. They are being naive because the Saudi government, if we are being honest. They will have billionaire friends. So, for example, if I were a billionaire, if I were a billionaire and I bought a club, and you're also a billionaire, and then you have a company, I can come and tell you, you should put your money and say you're sponsoring the club, and they cannot hold me because it's not my company. So is it not something that these guys can do that? Okay, you're stopping them from having Saudi-backed companies, but they can easily go and meet their other billionaire friends and do the same thing.
Do you know what's funny? When you actually think of it, I was reading something that these guys, they even invested in some American companies. I think Uber was one of them or something. So it's not even hard for them to use one of those companies to funnel what they want to do. It's not hard.
No, I think if they use Uber or whatever company they have a share in, they will not be allowed to do it. But the thing is, they have friends that have businesses that they themselves are not a part of. So to me, stopping them from doing this, yes, you can say it's morally right, but at the end of the day, you're still not going to stop Newcastle, because Newcastle is going to become a big club, whether the other 18 Premier League clubs like it or not.
Yeah, facts.
Another thing about Newcastle, this just got me laughing, because I think we all want to see the fight against racism. We all want equality for everyone, but I think the Kick It Out campaign in England is taking this stuff too far. Like, they don't even know what they are fighting against now, because you know how so obviously the Saudi guys that took over Newcastle, obviously they're Arabs and they wear headdresses on their head, like, so you have this whole look of like the way you have Man City's owners or something. So the way they dress like Arabs, and then some fans dress like that to the game, the Newcastle Tottenham game, and then you have the Kick It Out campaign saying that they should not dress like that because it's against whatever they feel like is like being racist. I'm like, are you guys joking? Like, is this so now? Is this how they are fighting racism? Like, they don't even know what they are fighting against.
They are just. I've told you.
It's a big joke.
I've told you this. I think off air. I've told you it's just the same thing when they do the normal Premier League no rule for racism thing. I've told you it has lost its value, because the way they are going about it is not like a normal ad where they are trying to just funnel money and do different kind of things, even especially when you sit on Sky Sports. So it's just the same thing now they are doing. They are fighting a cause that don't even make sense, instead of them to stick to what they are doing.
You know the interesting thing? The interesting thing is that they just pick like 2 weeks in a row. I think they did it this weekend. I think they will do it next week, where you have the entire Premier League fixtures shown in black and white. Like, everyone is the same. No color, no nothing. So you have it for... you had it last week. You have it next week. And then they will not do it again maybe 2 months from now. Then they do it 2 weeks in a row. And right, these are their campaigns against racism. And I'm like, fine, I get you people's drift. I understand where you're coming from. But this stuff you're doing is not going to stop racism.
Well, I just think it's a very different topic at the end of the day. But what I'll just say is, no matter what they try to do in order to police Newcastle, it will not work, because they'll end up being a big club. Just give them time. It will come for everybody.
Okay, so we're done with the Premier League. La Liga, your boys, Barcelona, back to winning ways. I mean, it has been a while before since we said that. It didn't start well. Valencia taking the lead early, a very good goal from Gaia. But then Barcelona bouncing back in, I would say, maybe proper Barcelona style. Ansu Fati with a good goal, very good goal. But then the penalty incident for me was dodgy. It was an iffy call. It was like, is it the penalty? I think it could have gone either way, but I'm sure you have a different view.
It's very easy. That was a penalty. If the guy
of course.
If the player didn't touch Fati, Fati was going to score. It's very, very simple. There was nothing stopping him to score. You can actually watch the replay to see it. But what I'll just say is, I don't need anyone to be excited. It's just the same way I was looking at Arsenal and their players when they were excited about getting the draw against Crystal Palace.
But Aguero is back from injury. Is that something to be excited about?
No. There's no need to be excited. Yes, we are thankful that he's back. We're thankful that our players that are injured.
Get the penalty.
No, to me, I'm just thankful. Dembele too as well will be given the green light soon. Okay.
Thank you for mentioning Dembele, because that was where I was headed to next. We know how Barcelona treated Ilyas Moriba, where they virtually banished him from the club because he refused to sign a new deal. For people who don't know, Moriba was a youth player at Barcelona. He has now gone on to sign for RB Leipzig. And so now, Barcelona's president, Juan Laporta, said that they are not going to do the same. They are not going to give him the same, give the treatment they gave Moriba to Ansu Fati and Dembele. Why? Because these are first-team players. And I understand that they are first-team players, but aren't you meant to meet out the same measures to everybody? Why will you treat Moriba like that, but you cannot treat Fati like that because he's an important player, and Dembele also?
There's no treatment. Like, this is... when you need to read more about the club to understand. Fati is signing a new contract. In our next episode, we'll be talking about a new contract. Even before we came on air, I saw it.
Are they slaves? Like, they must sign a new contract. If I don't sign a new contract, can't you still treat me with respect as a professional?
If you want to sign a new contract, there's no problem. If you don't want to sign, there's still no problem. The issue
there's a problem because they banished him because he don't want to sign.
No. They banished him because of the toxicity it was bringing to the club.
What do you mean toxic? He said he didn't want to sign. It was just that simple. They were the ones that made it toxic.
No. You're reading something else. He wanted to sign a contract. He was demanding for something that Barcelona felt that we can't give you. Barcelona.
So if you can't give him, you might as well just let him go without all the whole problem of banishing him.
Barcelona puts... every club does this. I don't know why this is an issue. Every club does this, if we're being honest. When they look at you...
banishes players.
No. They banish a player when the player is bringing toxicity to the club. It's very simple. So when they look at you and you're not... obviously, he said he doesn't want to sign
I wish we had time to really talk about this, because I don't understand how he was being toxic. You gave him a contract. He said he's not signing it. So how is that being toxic?
No. He said he wants to sign a contract. He gave him a contract. Mm-hmm. Everything was settled. All of a sudden, there was a youth talk from his camp and say, no, this is what we want. Barcelona came to the table again and said, okay, this is the deal we'll give you. They improved a bit on the deal. And all of a sudden, he was demanding more and more. Barca said, no, this is what we are offering.
Now, you know why? It could come as a reason of he wanted to get a lot of money to make sure that, okay, even if I'm sitting on the bench, I'm getting this amount of money that can console me. Or
no problem.
He wanted testing assurances, which obviously they were not going to give him.
This is what I'm saying. You're a neutral, so you don't understand that. If Ilyash was still at Barcelona, he would be a first-team player right now. But now he has chosen his own path. He has went from bench to bench. So congratulations to him.
But at least he's getting more money. So, well, congratulations to him again.
Exactly.
Still on Barcelona. I find it very interesting where, you know how I feel about some statements. Like, I would say there's one statement Ole made some seasons ago when they got to the Europa League semi-final. And he said that he hopes they win this tournament so that it will be so basically when they win the Europa League, it will open the door for them to win more trophies. And I'm like, there's no need for you to come out and say that, because are you trying to say if you don't win the Europa League, you'll not win any other trophy, because Europa League will not have opened the door? And they didn't win that Europa League. They went out in the semi-final. Until now, there's no trophy. So there are some things that coaches say that I'm like, why are you even saying it? And for me, this one that Koeman said is another example. Koeman said that Fati and Depe have a good understanding. And I'm like, how is that possible? Fati has been injured for a year. Depe just came. They've played, three games together? Three games, I think. Fati has played three games. So how can they have a good understanding after three games? Is it not better for you to just keep quiet and let them keep showing the good understanding you think they have on the pitch?
Honestly, we've been through this already. If we start talking about
might as well just ban this guy from talking to the press, because he says really daft things.
That's what I want to highlight. We've been through this already. If we start talking about it, as Kuman has said, we'll be here for 2 hours. So let's just move on.
Okay, now over to the Bayern Liga. I mean, how can you have first versus second, Bayern Munich destroying Leverkusen 5-1? And this was meant to be a tough game on paper.
I don't even know. Like, some people are saying the team have really improved. Like, they are comparing it to the Flick side, which to me, I feel as a Flick side was just better. But now, looking at Bayern, they even smashed these guys 5-0. First half, so already 5-0. Second half, they were just cruising.
I feel like a clown because I was talking up Florian Wirtz before the game. But to be fair, he did assist the Leverkusen goal.
Of course.
No, but you don't expect him to do anything. He did his job. He assisted.
No problem. Of course, yeah. I've heard you. At the end of the day, what we'll remember is Bayern smashed them. And they actually repeated for the Champions League.
Unfortunately for them. But I think this is just... I mean, this is Bayern, yeah? Bayern are going to win the Bundesliga. Let's not make any fuss about that. They are going to win the Bundesliga. And I think Leverkusen are going to finish in the top four. This doesn't define their season. Bayern are going to do this to most teams. So I think Leverkusen fans can have solace in the fact that they are not the only team that are going to be disgraced by Bayern Munich this season.
Yeah, of course. I don't need to be a fortune teller to tell you Bayern. So
I think Bayern might even do this to some Champions League clubs. I mean, they've already done it to a certain club from Spain already this season.
Of course.
And the second leg is going to be even more beautiful to watch because it's going to be at the Allianz Arena. So
the second leg, I think Barcelona will try because their players
will try to do what?
It should be more competitive. That's what I would say.
Of course. And are they going to draw a win?
No, Bayern will most likely win. But I'm just saying to be more competitive. That's what I'm saying.
We'll see about that. Now over to the Serie A. We had very interesting games. We had for me, Napoli is still perfect. I mean, if we're not taking them seriously before, I mean, we both of us were taking them seriously, but if some other people are not taking them seriously, now you should. Because this game was so tough for them. And then still, in the 81st minute, very late in the game, they still got the goal. Victor Osimhen with the winner.
Exactly. Nigerian brother doing his thing. We saw senior man Kelsey against Mayu. Now we're seeing another person doing his own against a good, very, very good team. So I just think Napoli, they're on course to... If they actually just, like I said in the previous podcast, if they actually keep everyone fit, I think they will be in. It's come towards the back end of the season.
We also had a good game, Roma Juventus. But something very strange happened in that game. Can you just tell us what happened?
I think they want to rob my uncle Mourinho. I wish
to your man. Uncle
everywhere he goes to. Like, there was an incident where I think Abraham he drove, like, it was with the ball. He carried the ball. He beat the defenders and he went down. So because of his honesty, he stood up immediately and was like trying to protest. I think he laid the ball off to, I've forgotten who he was. The other guy he laid the ball off to, he went down as well. And that was like a penalty, but the ball came to Abraham and Abraham scored. So they ruled out the goal and said penalty. And the guy ended up missing the penalty. So
Thank you. Now, I think they should do IQ tests for referees because how can you give a penalty to a club when they've scored the goal? Like, does that even make any sense?
Exactly.
As referees, we're told that they are taught to give advantage to the club. Exactly. So wait and see the entire phase of play out before you blow for a penalty.
Do you know what's funny? The previous day before that match, in England, we saw something like that. Mahrez went down, but De Bruyne ended up scoring. So they didn't give a penalty, which really hurt me in my FPL. I don't know if you saw that against Burnley. Mahrez.
Yeah, I did.
So, at the end of the day, that is just simple IQ. There's no need for the penalty. Except the only time you should give the penalty if the incident warrants a red card. So if the incident warrants a red card, then you should now call for...
I think you can able to give the red card after. Just allow the goal to stand, for God's sake.
No problem. That's crazy.
Oh, but I see. I get what you mean. That so you have to give the red card, and if you don't give the foul, then you can't give the red card. Yeah, I understand that.
Yeah, exactly.
Then we had Lazio beating Inter Milan. Very impressive win coming from behind. Inter Milan, this derails their title challenge, but we'll see how they go. While the other side of Milan, AC Milan winning Hellas Verona 3-2. Now oh, Champions they... League.
Okay.
Champions League.
So
we have some interesting games this Tuesday and Wednesday. Which fixture exactly are you looking forward to?
I don't know what to even tell you. I'm looking at the Ajax Dortmund. It's very enticing. ATM versus Liverpool, another good clash. FC Porto against Milan.
So let's quickly do some predictions here. And you don't need to tell me the score. You just need to tell me who will win or is it going to be a draw. So, obviously, I'm not going to ask you the easy ones like Man City versus Club Brugge with no disrespect to Brugge.
Okay, let's do it like this, yeah? You ask me one, I'll ask you one. Different fixtures.
So, let me look for the hardest one to ask you.
Oh, you go first.
Ajax Dortmund.
Ajax Dortmund. I think this would be a goal fest. I think Ajax will edge it, so Ajax will win.
Ajax will win. Okay.
So your own. This is your own. Luis Suarez versus Salah. ATM Liverpool. Who will win?
I think it will be tough. Atletico will park the bus as usual. We heard Klopp's comments say that he doesn't like the way Atletico get about their business, but he still respects Simeone. I think it will be tough, but Liverpool will still edge it.
Like it's
now, this might sound funny because of the gulf in class between both clubs, but Inter Milan Sheriff, keeping in mind what Sheriff have done so far in their first two games.
Oh my God, Inter will pack Sheriff, bro.
Really?
Yes, exactly. Something like 3-1.
Inter are going to win 3-1. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so Man United boys, the Brigade boys versus Atlanta.
Oh my God. You know, this is actually what I should have asked you instead of the Inter Sheriff. I just
Of course.
Because I can tell you that this is so difficult to call because Atalanta very good going forward but very, very suspect defensively. United suspect everywhere going forward and defensively. But I think United need the win. Ole knows that his job is kind of on the line. So I see United getting a result. Let me say United will not lose this game. Is that good enough as a prediction?
Yeah, always scared as usual, sitting on the fence. So,
sitting on the fence. Let me say, United just edge it.
Okay. Now you're being brave. That's good.
Okay, so that brings us to the end of the episode. Any last words, Leonard?
So guys, stay safe. Enjoy the beautiful games in the Champions League. And if you'd like, you can watch one or two midi clubs in the Conference League. Other than that, see you.